Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Okay, and Chris, we are live today on the WFO Life Podcast. How are you doing this afternoon?
Doing all right, even though I feel like I'm living in irony with us being quarantined on Cinco de Mayo, you know, with a virus named after a Mexican beer. So it seems like a cruel joke by the universe. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, things are hopping here in Corpus Christi. Cinco de Mayo is always a big holiday in part of South Texas, and it seems like everybody's taking the incremental freedoms, you know, as a chance to go to the beach and, you know, really be out and about. So it's interesting to see how society plays out with all the – you got people on one end of the spectrum that are super cautious, which rightly so in some situations, and then you got others that are ready to jump back into the deep end of the pool and, you know, business as usual. So it's been definitely interesting times.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, we're going to find out, just like politics, either extreme is probably not correct. Yeah, right, somewhere in the middle is probably the sweet spot.
Yeah, the messy middle is where all this is going to go. You know, what I've been telling patients is, and people that ask me my medical opinion on this whole thing, I think there, you know, you cannot deny that there's a serious nature to the COVID-19 situation. There's been lots of people that have died, and many of them had advanced diseases and they had advanced age. And so we're starting to see a better definition of the people at highest risk. Just the other day, I got news that a patient in our population had a major respiratory illness in February of this year, so several months ago. The father went ahead and had the child retested, or the child, it's a teenager, had the teenager tested because they were suspicious about that illness a while back. So mm-hmm. they got IgG testing, and sure enough, kid had COVID-19 at some point. Wow. So he had the antibodies. Well, that kid sits right, you know, next to my kid in a math class, and, you know, was walking around the school and going on field trips and everything else all during February, even though they had a cold. So it was like, I think this was here a lot longer, and there's probably, we're going to find a lot more people that have been exposed that didn't get critically ill. But I think the point I'm trying to make with everybody is, like, make sure that, like, if you're higher risk, I mean, if you're diabetes, if you have diabetes, you have chronic heart problems, if you're way overweight or you're over 65 years of age, take a little more caution. Wear those masks. Avoid crowded areas. Let's let this thing play out a little bit more. Let's get some more information, get some more data. And then the folks that are lower risk, probably you can get out and do a little bit more still. Be cautious and try to respect other people's space. And I think we won't go back to business as usual anymore. I think life will change here for us from a hygiene and social standpoint, but I think we're going to have some semblance of normal come back, I think. So
I mean, obviously you and I, for various for probably different reasons, you're a physician, you know, I'm a leader in, you know, the military, but, you know, so we dig into things sometimes similarly but for different reasons. So I think one of the things that I found fascinating is, you know, everybody's kind of hanging their hat on how quickly they're developing, you know, vaccine clinical trials and things like that. But when I look back into the archives, the first version of this, you know, the original SARS-CoV-1, I mean, to my knowledge, there's still not a vaccine for that. Right. And obviously, there's not a vaccine for the common cold, you know, which is a virus. So I think maybe some people are – different things give them a false sense of hope, but I really think the what's already happening, kind of the growing herd immunity, is just like a natural version of a vaccine, right? Like, the more people have been exposed to it, the more people, you know, when they're exposed to it again, won't get sick, or, you know, can deal with mutations of it. They get a milder version of it, because, I mean, if you look at the yearly flu shot, it's only about, what, 60% effective in some, you know, studies?
Not even that one. At best. Yeah. There have been years in recent past where it's below 20%.
So, not to scare everybody, but I think that, you know, the things our bodies do naturally, Obviously, unless you're compromised, when you're talking about viruses, also sometimes a lot better than what science can provide, right? I mean, it's just
absolutely.
There's not a magic bullet for
number one advice
stuff.
I've been giving people that I can think of is get yourself as healthy as possible, be physically active, eat right, stop eating processed junk food, get your health in order, sleep. You know, we boost our immunity most at night when we sleep. Make sure you're not burning your candle at both ends. You know, there's so many little things that people just sort of write, oh, yeah, yeah, I should sleep more. Oh, I should exercise. No, it's a matter of going and doing it. And if you do, your immune system will respond. I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes into, you know, one of our themes a lot of times with the Stoic philosophy is you can control what you can control, and that should give you, you know, a sense of a little bit of power inside, a little bit of pride saying, hey, I can control a lot of these things. Because even if you look at some of the diseases that aren't as communicable, like Ebola, but have a much higher, you know, very high mortality rate. I mean, you think about it, there's still over 50% survive a lot of times, you know, bouts with Ebola. So you think about how, you know, terrible and deadly that disease is compared to, you know, what we're dealing with now. But my guess is the people that survive something with like a 50% mortality rate, you know, are likely following, you know, either by design or they have some type of, you know, good genetics, is that they're stronger and able to withstand a virus like that. So the more you can invest in, you know, your health, fitness, that you can control, the more likely you're not going to have to worry about something like this, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely well said. That's exactly true.
Yeah.
So we're kind of doing a random show today on a couple of topics. We had an interview planned today. It got postponed. Our speaker that was due to be interviewed today had a second engagement that he was not 100% aware of at the time. So we are going to do this random show, but then probably record another interview that I'm really excited for. It's going to be with Rex House. He is a author of a book called Attitude, The Difference Maker, and it's brand new. It's coming out, I think he said it was later this week. I did a little intro with him a day or two ago. At any rate, we're going to have him back on, so I look forward to interviewing him. It's a great little read, and I think that, you know, it's going to fit right in with what a lot of our listeners hear from us about mindset, about, you know, having the right attitude, about growth mindset, all these kind of things, which kind of is one of the things I've been thinking a lot about lately. And one of the things I wanted to bring up on, you know, on today's show was the idea of growth mindset. You know, with this current environment we're in, we've had a lot more time to reflect. We've had a lot more time to, if we choose to, we've had time to pursue interest in other areas, because a lot of our distractions, like movies and eating out and even to some of us going to work and things like that, have been removed. Now, some of that is coming back, and we have options ahead of us about how we're going to live our lives moving forward. But one of the things I noticed is that there's been a lot of people, and I was pleasantly surprised at how many people have taken on what I call a growth mindset, where they're out looking for ways to better themselves. I'm so pleased that I've heard people tell me, I started a garden. I have started exercising. I am now trying to read a couple of books, you know, in the month, and, you know, things like that. They're doing things to try to make themselves better. I think as human beings, we should be moving forward in some capacity. Now, we don't have to, you know, if it's not our nature that, you know, we're not trying to take on the world on everything, but if we're just trying to grow and make ourselves a slightly better version of ourselves on a day-to-day basis, I think that's the point. I think that's why we're here, is to serve others and to grow a little bit every day. So I don't know how that lands for you, what your experience has been, but for me personally, I've always had kind of this growth mindset. And then lately, it's so nice to see other people around me. They're starting to, especially in our Future Focus network, there's so many people joining that right now, and you can tell that they're out there trying to do things that are positive. And that growth mindset, I think, is super important. And I'm really encouraging people that when you have other options, remember what it was like, and remember that you can continue to grow, and you don't have to just go into automaton behaviors of, you know, going to movies or doing things that you normally, you know, think, oh, well, that's like kind of a waste of time. Don't go back and waste time, waste opportunity. continue the growth mindset, continue to keep that quiet time and the time with family and all the things that we've had. A little bit of a soapbox of mine, but that's what I was thinking about when we mentioned doing the show today, was reminding people of the growth mindset. And I hope others hearing this have their own examples maybe they can share with us.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of things we talk about, I take a military lens, not always, but, you know, in this case especially, it reminds me of reflections I've had about sometimes the military, whether you're deployed, and, you know, when you hear the word deployed, people think of, you know, combat in Iraq or Afghanistan or other places, but the military does a lot of just peacetime deployments to places where, you know, you're separated from friends and family in the United States, which kind of stinks. But once you get there, you know, you may be in a ship or you may fly there, but a lot of times you'll just live in Japan for 6 months or Korea or, you know, fill in the blank, or you'll have a barracks room in Japan or Korea, you know, places where we've had hubs for, you know, since the World War II time frame. But then you'll do these like little detachments to Thailand or the Philippines or Singapore. And so you think about the challenges, but also the opportunities that having that time brings up. And so when you mention growth mindset, it reminds me about those times that I've had, and then, you know, reflecting on friends and coworkers that have had different deployments, is, you know, you can take that time to, you know, be sad because, you know, you're not in the United States. You have to deal with people surrounding you that speak a different language. And so it's really easy to become a hermit in a way and sulk and just go to your barracks room and, you know, get drunk and, you know, find bad short-term relationships with the local populace. That's obviously right. Something that sailors and Marines are known for. But, or, you know, you can, you know, get in touch with your faith. You can read, you can learn the language and immerse yourself. I've had fascinating interactions with Marines that have worked for me that have gone to Japan for sometimes like extended tours and become fluent in Japanese and, you know, taught their children Japanese. And, you know, it's kind of cool to be immersed in the culture. And so that's an example of, like, you can go there, get drunk and, you know, pick up people of, you know, opposite sex, same sex, whatever your flavor is, or, you know, you can, you know, work on yourself. So I think it is good that we've interacted with people on social media and you hear good stories about people, you know, helping, you know, those in their community that are more at risk for, you know, COVID-19, going to buy groceries for elderly or sick.
I mean,
brings out the best in ourselves and humanity if you take it the right way. So I think that, you know, what you're talking about can be a powerful thing that people can latch onto. And then, you know, if this comes up again, like if we get released from our, you know, home penitentiaries, hopefully within the next month or so, but then it comes back with a vengeance in the fall in a mutated version, you know, we may get locked down again, you know, right? So a lot of this might be in investing in, okay, how we deal with this, because it may not be our last stint in this, you know, current coronavirus environment. So,
yeah. So I think moving forward, I'm trying to maintain some of the positives that I've reflected on in the last few weeks, and I'm trying to make sure that some of those gains that I've made in relationships, and education, and also life planning. That's another big thing that I think has been a good time frame right now, is to plan and where am I at, reassess where I'm at in my life. This is a good time. We should do a whole show sometime on planning, goal setting, things like that, because I think there's definitely some value in that. I know I'm a planner. You can't plan everything, but to have some type of battle plan, you know, laid out, is, I think it's important. You know, I mean, currently right now I'm training for, you know, I'm tentatively training for this marathon we've been talking about, this Marine Corps marathon. And my first goal, my first waypoint, if you will, is July. That's when I'm going to make the call whether I'm going to push on and go for the full marathon training. Well, right now I've got a roadmap, and I was just talking with Dr. Cortez the other day, one of our previous guests, pediatrician friend of mine that we run together all the time. We were talking about, you know, he said, well, you can't have a plan for exactly everything, you know, and I said, no, you can't, you know, you can't label out every single mile you're going to run over the course of the next 3 to 4 months. But having waypoints or checkpoints where you should be, I think that's important for anybody, not just training for a race, but in life. It's like, where am I at? Where should I be? And, you know, I kind of challenge other people to think about where are you at in your waypoints of your life? And, you know, it's just like training for a race. It's the same thing.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think I'm a good example of it in a way. But in the Marine Corps, especially being the smallest service that has, you know, arguably one of the more unique mission sets, I did a whole resident year-long school, which was essentially how to plan for, you know, bigger and bigger scale operations. And so the hard part about, you know, what you were saying and what we learned is you have to be rigidly flexible, if that makes sense.
Because, yeah, yeah,
you know, yeah. So you have to have a plan and you have to know how to plan and the importance of it, but you still have to maintain creativity and flexibility inside of that planning process. And so I think depending on personality types, that's really hard, you know, to get through your head, because typically people fall, I would say polar in a way, where some people are very organized, very meticulous, very rigid, and then other people are, you know, more creative, more, you know, flow as you go, you know, types. So there's not a lot of people. I mean, you know, there's the obviously combinations and permutations of that, but a lot of times, you know, you see people with a messy desk, you see people with like the desk where even they have a place labeled for where their coffee cup goes, right? So
right.
I mean, so it's hard to be solidly in the middle when it comes to something like being a planner. You're kind of a planner or you're not. So for me, I know being in that school for a year, it was helpful to say, well, you kind of have to force yourself to be both, but like many things, just like running a marathon, you can train yourself to do it. You don't have to naturally be that type of person. Or even if you're not naturally that type of person, you can say, okay, well, I can learn a framework that I can be myself within that planning framework. And so that's, I think, what is a...
Yeah, I think there's layers to planning too. For instance, like you were saying, you can overplan. There has to be a balance between planning and action, and you can plan, like it's easy to do a sports analogy. So I'm planning for this marathon. If I can plan out generally that I'm going to run 3 to 4 major runs a week that are going to have a certain style or premise to those workouts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can know that I want to have a general period of time that I'm going to train and build over the course of the next 3 months. But each week to week, I'm going to have to adapt my plan based on how I'm, you know, how I'm, my physical ability is matching up with that plan. So I might have to tweak it a little bit one way or the other and adjust. So you have to have some flexibility where the rubber meets the road. And then the interesting thing about planning and executing and action is at some point there's also these places that, like when I get to July, I'm going to have a plan for the next few months until October. You know, let's assume I'm doing well, I'm ready to push on and try to push on for a full marathon training all the way through the race in October. Well, at some point, I have to psychologically make a decision. I've heard military guys say that you burn your boats. You know, you decide, I've made my plan. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the best I can, and I'm going to burn my boats. And I don't know if that's an old Viking saying or whatever, where it's like, hey, if you're going to go storm this island and take it over, then we're not going to – there's no retreat. We're not going to go back. It's either we're going to, you know, die on the beach or we're, you know, or win, one or the other, because we're going to burn our boats. You know, and that's kind of an old – I guess some – I don't know where that saying came from. But it's kind of that – it's that final stage of planning where it's like, okay, you can only plan so far. You've calculated all the possible risks and, you know, pluses and minuses of whatever story you're doing. And then the reality is you have to at some point burn your boats and execute. So I think I think everybody needs to do a little planning. We need to make sure that we're looking to adapt to situations as they come. And then at some point, reassess where you're at and then execute. So we had a minor glitch. Second time this happened. I have a feeling it's the internet connection in my office. It's the second time we've recorded and we have a glitch when I'm in my office. I don't know why that is, but I think it drops coverage. But we are back, and I think one of the things we wanted to talk about is what are you reading right now? Because we know, here we are talking about personal growth, and what are you reading, and what are you studying right now?
So right now, I think I alluded to it in the Stoic session, but I think at that point I had just bought the audio book, which I've subsequently bought the hard copy book, which is usually a good sign. So if I, a lot of times I'll see something, or it could be what's considered a classic or semi-modern classic, and so I'll give it a listen on Audible during my long runs or during my what used to be commutes. No more commuting except from, you know, my bedroom to the living room now, but you know, I tried to make use of my time, so I would listen to a book, and then if I really liked it and I wanted to make note of a lot of things, I would buy the hard copy and sometimes read it, or at least go back and annotate it. So I started listening to Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, and I think it's been so it's been alluded to in, you know, I think TED Talks and, you know, prominent YouTube speakers and the like. And so anyway, I listened to it, and probably, you know, it's one of those in the very first chapter or two, there was like so many things. I was like, wow, I need to write that down. Wow, I need to highlight it.
Right.
Because,
right,
you know, as often is the case, when people experience the extreme of life, you know, whether it be you know, lives, deaths, births, you know, wars, famines, you know, come to mind. But in this case, it was a Holocaust survivor that survived, you know, four or five different concentration camp experiences. And so he was a doctor before going into the camp. And so that doesn't always, they don't care about that, or the Nazis didn't care about that in a lot of situations. But eventually, there was, you know, they needed the people that could work to work. And so they were asking, hey, you know, if you're a doctor and you can, you know, treat some of these, you know, prisoners that were eventually going to murder or going to die, but we want them to work, then, you know, they would get sometimes, you know, special privileges. And but more than anything, they just wanted to help each other. Right. They were all, you know, even if they were from different countries, they were most of Jewish descent, whether that be ethnically or religiously, you know, they were in these circumstances. So Viktor Frankl found himself, you know, in a physician's role at different camps. But, you know, every time you get moved to a camp, you don't know, you know, what the situation's going to be. So he ended up becoming the founder of, you know, a type of psychotherapy called, you know, logotherapy or logotherapy. And he really did it from his experiences of trying to make sense out of, you know, surviving a Nazi death camp, and right, and how to, you know, put that in perspective. I mean, it doesn't make sense to anybody. And the more I learn about the Holocaust, and I've been to several, you know, especially in the Northeast, there's a lot of huge, incredible Holocaust museums that I've been to, but I mean, you can never, I guess, really learn enough about it to put it in the proper perspective. And so anyway, that's what I'm listening to, and I guess, you know, reading right now, that's kind of having a huge impact on how I see the world.
Yeah, Man's Search for Meaning's a heavy book, but very deep. You're in definitely deep waters reading that. I read that in college. And it's, you know, it's a modern day Stoic take on how to interact with the world. I mean, essentially the single distilled walkaway point is you always have a choice how you respond to the world, you know, and you know, you may not be able to choose your circumstances around you, but you always choose how you respond to the world, and that, and they can't take that. Nobody can take that from you. And that's a very powerful thing. And I don't know how many people, you know, would sit down and read that, and it's a fascinating book, and it's a classic. It's I mean, the depth, you know, it's a super deep book, and yeah, I remember all that very well. I read that. I think I read that when I was at Baylor. I want to say when I junior senior year, I read that in college, and probably had to write papers on it and all that kind of thing. And it's a fascinating read.
Yeah, I pulled some just quotes about him in the book, to read and think about during this podcast. But, one of the things he said, relating to what you just talked about is he said, everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. And so it said, this opinion was based on his experiences of suffering and his attitude of finding meaning through the suffering. In this way, Frankl believed that when we can no longer change the situation, we're forced to change ourselves. And so, which is kind of funny because that ties into what we talked about with our current quarantine. It's like, if you can't change the situation you're in, obviously the Holocaust was a lot worse than what we're experiencing right now, thankfully. But we're in a situation we can't change, but we can change ourselves and how we focus on things. So
yeah, super powerful.
Yeah. So and it was interesting because I haven't finished the book, but I haven't come across him mentioning the Stoics or Stoic philosophy. He mentions like Nietzsche and some other philosophers, but which is cool because he's almost coming at it with his own version of Stoicism. And just like other things that you read in philosophy or, we sometimes in intel in the military, you find like, hey, it's one thing if you find a source of something interesting, but if you find another source that confirms it independently, that makes a stronger case. And so I think that's what he's really doing. He's like,
I don't recall him quoting any Stoics or any Stoic philosophy. But what I think is happening is he's a modern day it's a human theme. It's a truth. It's a natural truth, if you will.
Yeah.
That Stoicism works, and it's part of the human condition to just bear with things and move on. And change yourself, change your attitude, change your mindset to get through whatever externally is happening. And that's what I meant by it. I didn't mean he was quoting Stoics, but it's definitely when you read it and you get the gist of the whole book, you're like, that's just like, sounds like something Seneca would say. It sounds like something Epictetus would say.
That's what I think. The light bulbs always go off for me when you think about the founding documents of our country, and you think about the Bible and some of the speeches by Lincoln. And so I think when you can find these patterns of life, I think it can be a source of strength for all your life, because I think it's a problem, honestly, of the world we live in. I was listening to I think it was Ryan Holiday, who's one of our favorite kind of modern Stoic thinkers, talking to I think it was Eric Weinstein, which that's an interesting combination. I found Weinstein through Joe Rogan. Everything is like 7 degrees of separation or less from Joe Rogan,
right?
So when it comes to
he's podcasts, in the middle of everything for some reason.
Yeah. So but anyway, he was talking about that. One of the things that when he talks to young people, because he was successful really young and then kind of, pulled away from that, supposed, or outward appearance of success to simplify his life and focus on, reading and writing, and got married, had a family, moved to a farm, and he moved from like LA, marketing scene to living on a farm in Austin, Texas. And so it reminds me of everything we're talking about, that was encapsulated in that too. He's like, right now everything is gray, right? Whether it be, not to make judgments on anybody, but it seems like, all of a sudden, there's no gender, there's no, borders, there's no, culture. And so that's good in some ways, right? There's certain walls that racism and segregation.
Right.
I mean, a lot of these things, it needs to be,
doesn't have a place, right?
Yeah, it needs to be pulled down and never heard from again. But then when we, like the things we were talking about earlier with universal truths, whether it be, in the Bible, in the Quran, in the Torah, there's these things that are just, as humans, you're like, wow, over thousands of years, it seems like there's a theme here. And so I think that the problem of having all this technology and all this information is people, especially young people, I think, get very overwhelmed, right? They get confused. They get, whether it be consumerism, I need to keep up with the Joneses, or I have to go to a certain school and get $250,000 in debt because that's what, you know, smart people do, you know. So I think that you know, he said, Ryan Holiday, he's like, you know, people will be surprised. They don't want to hear it, but, you know, what you're longing for is what humans are designed to do, which is to find a mate, get, you know, get married, have children, and grow old and die, you know? Right. I mean, it's like, you know, it might not be sexy. It might not be backpacking across Europe and, you know, 20 or 30 sexual partners a year. But, you know, we're not set up really – yeah, to do these things that we think are the right things to do. And so I think that, you know, maybe encapsulate a couple things and tie up this note on man's search for meaning. And what I'm thinking about right now is, like, he talked about, you know, kind of what we're mentioning, the three kind of universal distinct ways that the humans can find meaning. And I think as I really started to latch onto this book when I came across it, he said, you know, number one is, you know, creating some type of work that you do or doing a deed, right? So,
right.
And I think that we're struggling with that right now, where people, even if you get, you know, subsistence from the government and, you know, money, food, keeping a roof over your head, you know, people were not designed to sit on the couch and get money, you know, without doing anything. And that's one thing if you're, you know, taking care of the kids or homeschooling. I mean, that's a deed. That's work, right?
Yeah, it's a calling.
But I think that's why I cringe when I hear some of these leading tech gurus talk about, I'm sure you've heard about it, universal basic income. You know, I mean, for God's sakes, it was a presidential candidate's main platform is like, you know, with all these industries going away, how do we figure out how to just, like, you know, fund people when their industry goes away, they can sit on the couch and make, you know, 50 grand a year or something.
I
think it was Andrew Yang that mm-hmm. you know, and the guy, I actually liked him in a lot of other ways, but it's like, man, okay, you know, we put a man on the moon, you know, we developed the first atomic bomb, we, you know, did all these other things. We can figure out a way how to transition our economy from, you know, where we're at now to more AI and more technology. We don't have to just have a bunch of drones sitting on couches, you know, sucking up, you know, thousands of dollars a month of tax dollars of the people that are productive, right?
Right. I mean,
people,
and more importantly, people for them, having a meaning, they need to have a purpose in their life.
Exactly. The second piece was like experiencing something or encountering someone. So that's just like, hey, you know, things that add meaning to your life are like a lot of studies have shown, it's like people are not happy by getting more stuff. They're happy by having experiences, like taking their family on a trip across the country, you know, in an RV, or, you know, going to different. So, I mean, that gives meaning, because people, you know, never forget that. I mean, you can have the nicest car in the world and it's going to either, you know, eventually collect dust or break and you'll buy another one. So it's like experiencing something. And last but not least is, by the attitude we take towards unavoidable suffering, right? So it seems kind of Debbie Downer, but like we've talked about, and I think the other notes I put that tie into this is, you know, accepting or looking at things the way they are, not as I'd like them to be, right? So you mean, regardless if you were born into poverty, if you're born short, you want to be tall, it's like, hey, you know, why don't we do the best we can and find meaning in the things the way they are, not as I'd like them to be. So that was kind of like my own, you know, take on it, because I think it applies to what we're living in now with this coronavirus situation. But really, I mean, anything in life, you don't know that even if a situation looks terrible, that it doesn't end up being like a good thing for you. Like, people get fired and they end up, you know, going to where their calling really is in life because they're forced to do it, you know, because they've been, you know, pulled and yanked out of, you know, kind of a semi-comfortable niche in the world, right? You can have somebody break up with you or have a marriage end, but then you end up saying, well, I didn't realize how miserable I was. And, you know, you end up, you know, in a better set of circumstances. So I think that there's a lot of things. Now, obviously, if you know, lose a loved one, you know, I mean, you can still find meaning in that. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's going to maybe end up being a, you know, silver lining, but you can always find meaning. And, you know, there's lots of stories about people that have battles with cancer, you know, and whether or not it eventually, you know, takes them, you know, from the earth or not, you know, the way that they take on that burden, you know, says a lot about who they are and sets an example for the people around them, whether they know it or not. So,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of
absolutely.
My end state on that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah. Well, I think that's those are, you know, for a random show, the idea we've covered this growth mindset, and I love talking about man's search for meaning, how that ties in with stoicism. I think these are themes that have definitely we've woven in and out of topics all through our last 38, 39 episodes of the WFL Life podcast. Before we close, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your leadership program you're going into and how that's been going. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so this has been really cool. It's been frustrating because we've had a little bit of a rolling start, as you as a drag racer, it wasn't a green light and burnout from the. But a lot of it's just been because of the coronavirus situations. We're supposed to have an in-person meetup at a ranch in Colorado in April, and so obviously that didn't happen. It's been postponed all the way to October. But it's a program sponsored by Boeing, and it's called the Spartan Leadership Program, and it's I think the brainchild and kind of another sponsor is the Travis Mannion Foundation that I do some volunteer work for, and hopefully you and Dr. Cortez will run on their Marine Corps Marathon team because it's an awesome group of individuals. But basically, you know, the foundation was started as a veteran service organization, in the name of Travis Mannion, who was killed by a sniper in 2007 and was awarded the Silver Star for his actions. And he's famous for saying before his last deployment, if not me, then who? When a family member was saying, hey, maybe I can, break your leg and you don't have to go on deployment because you just got back from a deployment. And, he said those kind of words that were, that are famous now, but he just said it being serious about who he was. Like, hey, I've been training. I'm ready to go. Even though, I just got back from a deployment, I volunteered and, I'm the one, if not me, then who? Saying he was saying somebody else will have to be, thrown in on the last
legit,
minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So anyway, so that's the background of the program, and they use veterans and Gold Star family members to go out to the local community and talk about character. So I think the cool thing about them and what they do is, they still provide charity, to veterans and transition assistance and, support to veterans and their families who've, been killed. But I think that their unique niche is they're investing in character by using, I said veterans experiences and Gold Star family members experiences to invest in the youth and teach them about character, because there's not a lot of, I hate to say it, great examples out there of character, and a lot of people, unfortunately, single parents that are, struggling and can't spend a lot of time with their kids. And so their character examples are from, TV, from social media. And so by having a veteran in front of them, given these examples of what character traits are and how you become a person of good character is powerful. So anyway, I applied for this program. And so they picked 12 or 15 people from different backgrounds to be part of this 7-month program. And they've gotten a lot of really incredible, just worldwide recognized leaders to be mentors for us. And the very first kickoff was with, one of our favorite podcasters, Jocko Willink.
So
it's kind of surreal being on a lot of us have done Zoom calls for work or catching up with family. And sure enough, I knew Jocko being very punctual, as he puts pictures of his watch every morning when he wakes up before 4:30.
Yeah.
So I got on about 10 minutes prior to the scheduled time. And sure enough, Jocko was already on with three or four of us. So I got a few minutes to chat with him one-on-one. And then he was only supposed to be with us 45 minutes or an hour. And he spent the full hour and a half that our session was supposed to take answering questions in detail and being very loose and unguarded. And so it's just fascinating, people that have had life experiences like him, and he's got kind of one of those guys, everything he touches seems to turn to gold because he's got a very, you know, rigorous thought process put behind it. You know, he makes his own protein powder, he makes jeans, he makes, you know, it's like, how does he go from an author to a podcaster to like all these products that, you know, seem to sell out because, you know, they're very well done. And so to spend an hour and a half with him to kick off this program, I think shows the value of the organization, and, you know, that this program over the next 7 or 8 months is going to be, you know, hopefully more developmental for me as a leader in my life, and, you know, hopefully for our podcast and community, that I can, you know, use some of those lessons to help other people out there. So
absolutely. I think that, you know, especially in the Future Focus Health Network, you know, we've had these little niche groups. We've got a fitness group and all these different things like that. I think that we probably eventually ought to have something or a corner that's on leadership. We could do that under the WFO Live podcast, but it's just something that's going to be an awesome opportunity to hear periodically what you learn from that program. So I think if you could if you could share even a small amount of what you learn from great leaders like Jocko Willink and that type of setting, and share that with the rest of us, I think that's super valuable to anybody that's going to be listening to this program.
Yeah, they have it very well organized into like modules, and so maybe, you know, after, you know, each quadrant of the course, I can, you know, write a short article about, you know, lessons learned so far. And I'm really looking forward to our first in-person evolution is going to be on the ranch of a guy named Brian Chontosh, and people can Google him, but he was a, you know, enlisted Marine that became an officer and was in some of the worst battles in Iraq and showed incredible leadership and ended up teaching at the Naval Academy. He was like a leadership mentor for the midshipmen at the Naval Academy. Now he's got a ranch and the Colorado mountains where he takes people up there and just imparts leadership and team building lessons, you know, in the Colorado mountains. And so we're going to be spending, you know, he actually led President Bush out in one of his State of the Union speeches. And when he was still active duty, so he's a Navy Cross recipient. And so I can't imagine that I'm not going to come out of it with a, you know, not lessons learned and being a better person to share with other people, you know, with those type of mentors. So
yeah, that's going to be amazing. Yeah. I wish I could go in your like backpack or something. Hang out and be a fly in the forest.
Can apply and be in cohort one, so this is what it's called.
So there's people that haven't
been working with the Travis Manion Foundation. I mean, they kind of, you know, put the net out there because, like I said, it's funded by Boeing, and so but Boeing is you know, paying for all the travel, paying for, you know, the curriculum, and, you know, so it's a well funded and supported program. So you know, we can maybe put a link about it if people want to apply, and, you know, check it out, because I think there'll be some good lessons for everybody in there.
Yeah, definitely push that to me. I'll get that in the show notes if we can get that together.
Sure.
All right. Well, I guess let's wrap it up for today. Again, we've got an interview coming later this week. I think we have two interviews coming later this week. So we've got a busy week of recording, but we'll get this out as content for our listeners. I've also been working on a couple of sort of shorter bonus posts, maybe some thoughts on COVID-19. I got some stuff on running-related injuries, things like that. So I'm going to be pushing those out over the next few weeks for anybody that's interested in that little niche. I, again, want to invite anyone that's interested in our program that wants to interact with us or be part of our community to go to the Future Focus Health Network. If you just Google that, it'll pop up. You don't really need a link, but we'll put one in the show notes. And if you see that, just log in, say, hey, I want to be a member. And then you can choose what you're into. If you want to do fitness, or if you want to read about COVID-19, or if you want to do general health topics. And of course, the WFO Live podcast has its own little tribe inside of there. So that's where you can say, hey, I'm interested in what you're doing, or make suggestions, anything. I think we're at a place where we've done enough episodes, interviewed enough people, that I think that we're probably, you know, got people out there that have questions or have comments or maybe even suggestions for us for future episodes. So I'm open to all of that, as I know you are. So if you got any final thoughts, Chris, before we close out?
No, you know, some of these episodes are the most fun because we have some, you know, loose framework, but we get to just record some of the chats we have, you know, off camera, so to speak, anyway. So, yeah, I appreciate the time.
I do like them, and they were probably the premise for why we started the WFO Live podcast, was just to record some of these conversations. So sometimes they'll be this way. Sometimes they will be as full-on interviews and us interfacing with people of interest that are living wide-open lives. But for today, let's sign off, and I'll catch you on the flip side.
Right, thanks.